A podcast about dogs? That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, Episode 3, re-release.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to The Art of Bombing, Episode 3, re-release. Dan Bublich Jr. here with you real quick. Just wanted to jump in here before we get to this episode with a disclaimer. Again, this is an early episode. The audio quality isn't the greatest. I did try to clean it up a little bit. Did what I could. But still not probably that great as what it could have been if I recorded it now. But it was a good episode. I sat down with Timmy Williams after we did a show together in Huron, South Dakota. We recorded the episode at my girlfriend's house, and so there were some distractions at, you know, there was a dog running around, and I think they made a cameo on the episode. I don't remember. But either way, like I said, I just wanted to warn everybody about the audio quality, because at the time I was recording these with my phone, with my cell phone. I didn't really have any software programs to help with editing and things of that nature, so it was what it was, and it is what it is. But anyway, it was still a good episode. Timmy Williams, if you don't know him, he was on The Whitest Kids You Know. He's a fantastic stand-up comedian. And we had a really good conversation about bombing. That's because that's what this podcast is about. So like all the other episodes, the early episodes, the audio quality, technically, they're not the greatest episodes. But content-wise and the conversations were full of quality. So this will not disappoint. So here is my conversation with Timmy Williams. Enjoy.
What about a podcast just called There's a Dog Here?
Yeah, right. There's a dog here. That'd be a great. Let's
talk about how there's a dog here.
Yep. Play with the dog.
There's this dog over here.
It won't stop playing with me.
That's the best. It's the so best cute. Problem.
Right? Oh, man. So the show was good tonight.
Yes. Tonight was a good show.
It was a good show. Small crowd, but they paid, so that meant they were vested in the show, so they had a good time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, if you spend your money on it, you're more apt to pay attention, I think.
Yep. As if we could have had that same show with the same crowd that didn't pay, and it would have been horrible.
Yeah, because they're all there as friends, too, so yeah. Like they had no reason to have to talk to each other unless they bought a ticket. It's yep. Interesting.
Yeah. Yep. So that's always good. And like I said, it was funny when you were doing that bit about the swords.
I did a bit about how only big cities have people that kill swords, and I didn't know that this small town had someone who killed
somebody
with a sword. Like, not that long ago.
Like, within the last decade this happened. So nobody was so that joke kind of bombed.
Right.
Nobody was laughing, because it probably hit too close to home. I, however, was in the back just laughing right. Hysterically.
It stabbed too close to home.
That it did.
Oh, man.
But other than that, like, you had a great set tonight. So
did you. It was good.
Yeah, it was a fun show. Well, it definitely was.
Is that dog going to eat a cheeseburger?
Maybe.
She's going to eat her cheeseburger.
Oh, man. But this show, this isn't about doing well. This is about bombing.
It's
and
about
so
tanking it, man.
It is about tanking it. I've had some horrific shows, and that's actually, I had one horrific show, and I'm not going to get into it, because this will probably be, like, the third episode, and people will be like, oh, shut up about that one show, Dan.
Oh, the first one going to be about yours?
Right. Well, the first one, sense. Yeah. Well, the first one, I'll talk about mine, and then, you know, I have another comic that'll be in the episode too, but
right.
But by this time, this will probably be like the third episode.
So,
yeah, they'll be like, "Shut up, Dan!
Get it?
Yeah, you had a one bad show.
Don't do ads for the dildo store or MailChimp. Just tell us about." Can I even say that on a podcast anymore?
I don't know.
Are MailChimp jokes okay?
I'm sure. I don't think anybody from MailChimp is going to listen.
No, they're going to sue the shit out of us.
Probably, and then that's okay. They won't get nothing. I don't got nothing. Nobody came to my show. I didn't make money.
Well, there you go. Well, here's my problem when it comes to the concept of bombing is because, yeah, I've done bad plenty. Everybody has. But you know, normally I don't see it as bombing. I see it as I wasn't good enough yet. Like, that's how it is in my head.
Well, and that's how
it should be. So I feel like it doesn't, it's not like, oh, you bombed. It's like, no, you just weren't good enough yet.
But have you ever, like, sometimes, like, I guess what I consider bombing is like when you go and it's the same with you. It's kind of the same concept that you didn't do well enough.
Right.
But you have that definite feeling. Like, you're, especially when you're on stage. Like, when you're on stage and you know you're bombing, but you still have 45 more minutes to go. Like, you can't bail. You know that because you're being paid.
Yeah.
And you have to just, that feeling is there.
Yeah.
Like, the whole time, like, just consuming you. You know, like, or devouring you would be the thing.
Right. Well, I know when, like, a bit like the sword thing isn't working, but yeah, altogether, I guess it's hard for me to tell. But I guess that is my bombing story, is that I didn't
realize you were bombing?
Well, I did, but I didn't do anything to course correct it. I was kind of, like, stubborn and pissed off, and I just went ahead with what I was planning to do anyways, which I guess, you know, maybe you should learn to do that, but maybe you should also learn to be malleable. But, I mean, in this situation, it's like, you know what? My attitude was like, screw everybody else, screw this audience, I'm just going to do this, get paid, and, like, go hide, which is exactly what I did.
Yeah, well, that's what most people do.
Right.
They do horrible. Because sometimes, like, I feel bad. Like, I felt so bad, I didn't want to take the check.
After this show,
let's talk about the show that you consider your worst show. Talk about that.
Yeah, so this was a Christmas party, shocker. It was a Christmas party that I did in my hometown, Watertown, in 2000, I want to say 13, but I'm not sure. And it was a Christmas party for a place called Verifications. It's a call center.
Yep.
They had like 200 people. I think they closed, but now some of the people still work from home, so.
Yeah, I know what it is. Yeah, they do like background checks.
Right, yeah. So I'm the real winner of the story because they closed. So they, you know, one of the girls, one of my good friends there, she worked for Verifications, and she's like, I know a guy that can do comedy at our Christmas party. They're like, great, and, you know, she called me, and it was in town, and it was a couple $100. I'm like, hell yeah, why not? I'll just go do comedy somewhere and sleep in my own bed, you know? And I did it, and it's like, you know, one thing, living in the Midwest and having grown up doing, like, comedically, I grew up on the coast, especially New York, but also a little bit Portland and a little bit in L.A., and it's like
a lot more liberal.
Yeah.
Like, it is very conservative.
And more open to experimentation.
Yes.
Yep, you know?
Yep. And I think that's kind of what I mean by liberal, not necessarily
right.
with politics.
Not politically, but liberally, artistic-wise.
Like, yeah.
So, like, when I tell people about doing comedy here, and I don't perform at Watertown very often, and this gig that I'm talking about turned me off of it.
Wow,
I tell people, well, the problem is I have too many shirt sleeves to perform in Watertown. That's my go-to joke, is that I don't have that, like, made-up redneck persona that I feel like people just expect at a comedy show here. It's weird.
Well, and I feel like that's because of your guys like Larry the Cable.
That's what it's referenced to. But
yeah, they automatically think that because you're from the Midwest, you're going to do that.
Right.
Do that comic.
And, you know, but and also on the other side of that, I don't often give audiences here enough credit because sometimes they're super cool and they go with all my weird kind of long stories
like
or
tonight.
Weird political stuff that, yeah, tonight, and I didn't do a lot of political stuff, but I get weird.
You got weird, you know? Though. You definitely got weird. You definitely got weird.
Into it.
But they were, yeah,
right. Exactly. You know, so it works. But in this situation, it didn't. So this was a Christmas party, and they bring me in, and the people had already been there for like an hour or so eating dinner or whatever. And I got to eat on the tail end of dinner or whatever. I think they just fed me a bucket of scraps. I got a plate of food. But they'd already been there, and they already had been drinking for a while. There's red flag number one. And then there's a raffle for some pretty serious prizes. There was a big TV. I think there was a vacation and a bunch of other prizes being given away. But they're like, okay, there's going to be a raffle after this comedian. And so it's like,
oh man,
what a bad idea. Whoever put it together, obviously Watertown's not home to a lot of people who know how to put together a comedy show.
Well, yeah, that's for sure.
That's not fair.
I actually just did a holiday party in Watertown last Christmas.
Oh yeah. And how did that go?
It could have been better. I mean, they were definitely, they were there for a while. And then they did, they actually did the awards, or not awards, but they did the raffles and the prizes before we went up.
It's so much smarter.
It is smarter, but then at the same time, people are like, they're done because that's all they wanted.
Yeah.
They wanted to get the prizes and then be like, oh, and now we have to watch entertainment? Crap, I just want to go home.
Yeah, but it's hard to, I mean, I go to Christmas parties for my other job and it's like, yeah, the prizes, there's always prizes.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I don't know why.
It's a Christmas. Instead of getting a Christmas bonus, they just get prizes for the holiday party.
Well, the boss of the Raiders station I work for does very well with prizes, so he's great. Anyway, so I'm there, and so it's already like a situation where everyone's drunk and already wants you to be done so they can get their TV. Their free TV.
Yeah, or that sounds horrific.
A bunch of free steak or whatever. And so I start doing my bit, and back then I was, you know, a little more confrontational, not in my material per se, but like in the way that I, if something doesn't go, I'm like, well, fuck you guys. And I don't say it exactly like that.
But you have the attitude.
At least when I started the show.
Oh,
but,
man.
I definitely had that attitude to it, you know?
Yeah.
So basically what was happening is there's about 30 people up front that had moved up there because they knew me or were like kind of a younger, my generation kind of people that kind of knew me from school or knew me from the show or whatever and wanted to hear me. So I had like 30 people up front that wanted to hear me and like 170 people behind them that did not.
Oh my God.
And so I'm trying to just barrel through my set. There's some parts work and some parts don't. I mean, anything. And plus, okay, so when they hired me, it's another thing of how the bookers don't know what they're booking for. The lady that hired me is like, don't swear. I'm like, okay. But then I slipped up once, and it killed just by saying, fuck, you know.
Yeah, and that always does.
Always does, because they're just drunk, and they want to hear dirty talk.
They really do. Like,
it's a part of the country ruled by church, and so they think that any swearing equals freedom.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of companies are afraid they'll offend somebody, and they're trying to keep everybody.
Right, yeah,
you know what I mean? There's that one old lady that works there that's going to get pissed if somebody swears. That's what they're afraid of.
Right.
But really, it's not most of the time. Because like I said, when Nathan and I did that holiday party, and I didn't like swear, but they wanted clean or whatever, but then I did do some edgier jokes because I was finally, nothing else was working. My clean stuff was going okay, but it wasn't like killing. I mean, I would get a laugh here, get a laugh there. And finally, I was like, you guys want to hear some edgier stuff?
The puppy's here.
And then I started doing some edgier stuff, and they were into it, so.
Oh my God, I'm so glad there's a dog here. Yeah, so it's like the people telling you aren't really taking into consideration that all their employees are going to be kind of tired and drunk, and they're trying to unwind. I mean, that's what party is for, so they don't maybe want to be all starchy and
just afraid of lawsuits.
Yeah, which is so dumb.
It is. It really is.
So I'm trying to, like, get through, you know, I'm just doing my material, and, you know, I'm using a note card here and there, but I'm mostly just going off memory, and it's like, I'm doing it and doing it and doing it, and, like, eventually, I'm just getting sick of the fact that the back two-thirds or whatever, or six-eighths of the audience, a fraction, three-fourths, it's a whole lot of people don't want to hear me. So it's like, eventually I'm just like, shut up, you know, say stuff like that, which, and you've seen me before, when I get heckled or whatever, I don't really like play around with them. I just go, shut the fuck up like that. Yeah. And normally it gets a good rise from everybody else because they think it's funny. So whatever. But so it kept going and kept going. And then I noticed, like, the people being loudest are the nicest dressed and drunkest people there, and they're in the back. And I'm like, you guys must be like the bosses, and you're not paying attention to the entertainment at your own Christmas party. They're like, fuck you! And I said, fuck you, lady! And after that, it was just awkward for the rest of the set, you know? But, like, at that point, it's like, I didn't really care.
Yeah.
It's just, and it just sucked. And so after the show... After the show, and by the way, it's not a puppy, it's a giant German Shepherd.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a sweetheart.
Puppy by age.
Right. But anyways, so after the show, the lady comes up, and she gives me the envelope with all my money, and I'm like, I think I actually said, really? She was like, what? I'm like, okay, thank you. But she goes, like, we both had ridiculous reactions. She goes, I'm just so sorry. So she felt bad, you know, and which, and then it's kind of on her, it's mostly on me, because I, again, I feel like if I was better or blah, 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 I would be more equipped.
Yeah, but I think, too, at the same time like that, it's definitely environmental. Like, right. You get into situations like that, and that's what happened with my situation. It wasn't the right environment.
Right.
And because you do, there's certain things that you should have for a comedy show. And a lot of times these, like, private events don't have things. You know? They don't know how to do a show. They're just like, oh, dance, monkey, dance. You know, that's the, you know, you're the clown, tell some jokes, make everybody laugh, juggle or something.
Right, but then the other side of that is, like, how you and I put together that show at the Goss Opera House.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't used to putting on shows, and so the first show, they have the tables way far back from the stage.
Yep.
And they didn't have music in between, and, like, they had a few other things.
Yeah.
Because they hadn't done it.
Yeah.
But they listened to you.
Yep.
When you told them. So, you know, it was good.
Well, yeah, exactly.
But in this situation, you know, there's not another show. There's just this one, so what are they supposed to do? But
yeah.
The bad thing there is, okay, so, I mean, I've been doing stand-up technically for 10 years since right before the TV show aired, but it's been very, very on and off.
Mm-hmm. There's
some years where I maybe only performed a few times.
Yeah.
And since the show ended and I moved back to South Dakota, I've been doing at least an hour a month, I think, on average, which is cool.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes even more. But anyway, so I've never felt like I've been at my full powers. And so I feel like if I was somewhere where I was doing shows every night, going out to mics or whatever, and, like, doing more shows, maybe I would have been more equipped
to
deal with these idiots. But the other problem is the internet age, and someone took a video of this performance, and it's still online because I'm not enough of an asshole to tell them to take it down, because I feel like that'll make me look bad. I mean, you can't. I don't want anyone to know that they've ever screwed up. You know, I don't want people to think that of, because I don't really care. At the same time, I don't have any other. I don't really have a lot of videos in my stand-up. So if somebody's going online to, like, I want to see Timmy, like, there's a good chance they're going to find that one. Which whoever posted it, kind of a dick, because they posted just like 3 minutes of it where I'm really bombing, and they put a caption on, like, look at this guy not know his audience is pretty much what they say.
Oh my god.
It's like, you know what, if you're gonna, like, it's like they posted it just to show people that I'm not good.
Yeah,
which I think sucks. It does.
And you know they did that because you were on the Wise Kids, you know, and that's what
probably they're trying to be cool.
And they would get views and everything on the video, which is dumb.
Yeah.
And if I was you, I would actually ask them to take it down.
Maybe I would.
And they'd just be like, hey, you know, I'm trying, you know, this isn't good to have up because I, you know, my stand-up's not, you know, it doesn't, the situation doesn't represent me. And if a booker goes looking for videos for me, they're going to see this and it's not good. It's not going to help me get booked.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know. I would definitely look into that. Yeah. But so, like, okay.
Or tell you to break your legs.
Yeah. Or, okay. Well, I might do it. Tell me where to go.
Well, I'm going to put someone's throat.
Apparently, it would only have to be Watertown. And so I have my girlfriend's dire wolf of a dog that I can sleep with. That's right. You're like, you take down that video or my dog's going to kill you. As long as you don't have a ball. As long as you don't have a ball.
Yeah, let's hit the ball, then she'll lick you.
And then we're done.
There's so much drool in my lap.
I know.
I love it.
So when you do have a bad night, per se, I guess since you don't really think of it as bombing, like, what? How do you feel, like, after a show? Like, how long is it with you? Like, sometimes, you know, like, after you have a bad performance, you know, how long does it stick with you? Before you're like, okay, it was a bad performance, time to move on.
Most ones I don't. Like, I honestly, when you asked me to do this, it was only today, so I didn't have time to think
about
it.
I know.
No, it's short, right. Because that is, I mean, the one that I told is the worst one. I mean, but the other thing is, I don't, you know, I just move right on.
Yeah. Okay, well, and that's good. Some people just, like, for me, it really depends on, like, it depends on the show. Like, an open mic, if I vomit an open mic, I'm like, meh, whatever. You know, I'm working on material.
Right, yeah.
Next one. But when I do, like, a show and I bomb, like, that particular night that I keep coming, it was that big of an issue. I'm making a podcast because of it.
Right.
Like, put it that way.
Right.
And so that's how much it's still eating
at me. A lot of people think about it. I mean, because it's like,
I almost quit. Like, I
did. You really?
Oh, my God. I wanted to quit. I called Nathan. Nathan Holtz is another comic friend of ours, just so for the people listening, so you know. He's a very funny comic out of Sioux Falls. Look him up or whatever. But I called him on my after the gig, and I was like, dude, this was the most horrible experience of my life, and I think I should quit comedy. Like,
holy,
and then I even called my girlfriend, too, and I was like, I don't know what to do. It was so horrible, and blah, blah, blah. So it really messed with me, because, you know, it was, I'm a perfectionist, I guess, and I want to do my best at everything. So for me, it was with me for a little while. It took a few days for me to process everything and then realize, and that's when I really, because I took a lesson out of it. And the lesson I took out of it is that not every situation is good for comedy. And there's certain things that there's certain environmental factors that'll make a bad show. And there's things that if you do it right, it's going to be a great show. And at a lot of these private parties, you're not going to have the right things because they don't know. It's not a comedy. Right. It's not a typical comedy show.
It's not a comedy show.
And a lot of these companies out here don't have huge budgets, so they're not bringing in, you know, they think, oh, hire a comic, and they're thinking somebody that's on TV, like Carrot Top or Seinfeld or somebody like that. You know, and they get us, and it's like, well,
what?
Yeah.
And that's a good point. They're not trying to put together a comedy show. If I'm someone who's putting together a holiday party for my office, I'm trying to keep it from turning into a bloodbath or an orgy.
Yep.
So trying to keep things sane and like as 21st century as possible.
Yeah.
And that's funny. Just evolve into sex on a table.
Right. And it's what's really funny too, like shows like that, where their private events are some of the worst events to do, but they pay the best.
Well,
and that's just it. Like, you know, the event that I did that was it wasn't horrible altogether. Like, I took something from it. It was a learning experience, but, and it didn't learn my lesson. I still booked other private gigs. Like, just today, I did a quote for a company picnic in June on a Tuesday in the middle of the day.
That's
where I'm at in life, guys.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And even though this will air by this time, won't air before this, but tomorrow night, I'm performing at a post-prom.
Are you really?
I am. So
wow. A private kid's post-prom?
Yes. Like a high school.
Rich Jimmy hired you to...
No. Like
girlfriend?
The school. The post-prom community hired
me. Oh, the party they throw to keep the kids from getting drunk.
Yes. Yes. They hired me and a hypnotist. The only reason I did it, there's a little more to it than just... I'm not, like, hard up for the money. But my friend, a friend that I went to high school with, her kid is at prom, and she's on the committee, so she reached out to me about it.
Which town? Here in Hero?
Del Rapids.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
So I'm doing it more as a favor, because I was like, right away, I'm like, yeah, this is going to suck. I'm like a 40-year-old guy without a job. I have nothing relatable to these kids, really. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, I'm gonna bomb. And then I was like, in fact, I'm probably, that's what I'm going to talk about. Like, I plan on opening with talking about how I'm not really here to make you guys laugh. Your parents actually hired me as a PSA. This is what your future can be. Now go to college and all that kind of thing. But they're lucrative as far as like pay goes. Right. So you do
it. So that's weird. Yeah.
You know, but
they're not fulfilling. And I think, you know, I think like I went on tour with Dax Jordan right around the time my daughter was born. We were on the East Coast and I did three shows with him and I don't think I did super hot. Was it three shows? I can't remember. Maybe it was only two. Anyways, we did a couple of shows together, and I didn't do super great at any of them. I kind of bombed-ish. I don't know if I bombed-ish, but it was just kind of mediocre. You know? And very mediocre, and like, again, I was kind of too defensive about stuff. Like, I called a guy the devil. And, you know, just... But then when I leave, I'm like, well, I don't know. I mean, I felt like I bombed, but at the same time, I felt like, dude, I just need to do this more.
So yeah, it's almost more of a, for you, it's not necessarily bombing. It's more of a, I'm just not experienced. I'm not necessarily getting enough experience. I'm not practicing it.
Right, and I hate it when the practice is a paid show. And for me, at my point, the point where I live in the middle of nowhere and can't just go practice, that the only times I perform are normally shows where I'm getting paid. So I don't like it to feel like a... Like tonight, I was trying out new jokes, and most of it worked, and it was such a lackadaisical feeling there that it worked. But like, I hate it when I'm doing a paid show, and I'm like, oh, "Excuse me, I just wrote this on the drive," you know. And sometimes people think that's cool, but also I don't like feeling like I'm.
Really depends on the environment.
Yeah,
environment. You know, actually, it's amazing how much the environment actually plays a factor in a good show.
Yeah, it's all the environment's fault. We're perfect. It's just the environment.
It's the environment. But I think that's one thing. Like, because bombing is part of the process. It really is. Yeah. And I was thinking about this the other day, and I wrote about it a little bit. Well, I just did a little tidbit where I was like, you know, comedy is this chaotic process of trial and error, trying to find what works and what doesn't. And there's no wrong or right way to do it, which that's what's beautiful about comedy. Like, everybody has their own path, you know what I mean? But bombing is definitely part of the process.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily talk about it. Like, they'll tell some stories here and there. But I think you can take something. Like, for me, if I do shitty at a show, I try to take something.
Yeah, no, totally.
You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's got to be a lesson. What could have I did to do better at this show? You know, because I want to kind of improve. Right. So, like, when you have shows like that, what do you try to do? What do you try to take away from them?
I generally pay attention to if something doesn't work, my first thought is going to be, oh, maybe there's too many words in it. And that probably comes from doing White as Kids, where we do a lot of short sketches and short things and, you know, try not to do anything too long. And,
also, try to cut some of the fluff.
Well, yeah, just try and go straight to the part that works. And also, you know, like I've said, and pretty much every time I've ever felt like I bombed or did poorly or whatever, it also involved people from the audience. And so I've tried to adapt to how I interact with them, which is generally I just try to not.
Yeah, which, and I think, and it's
just
good
at talking to hecklers, so I'm like, let's just not make that part of what I do.
But I wonder if you almost not necessarily have to talk to them, but you need to kind of address it, but in a less aggressive way. Because I wonder if that's what derails you sometimes, like you, because you were talking about how, like, you kind of get aggressive when you're not doing well or when there's a heckler, and then sometimes when you do that, the crowd, you lose the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, he's being shitty to this person.
Yeah.
Whereas if you play with the person and shut him down in a playful way, then the audience usually takes your side, and then you don't lose the whole audience.
Yeah, so, but like, I don't get aggressive anymore. Like I was saying, what I do now is I'll just say, like, shut up in a funny way and then be done. But like, even then, I try not to do anything anymore. I just kind of keep going with the flow.
I'm kind of the same way. I'm not really a crowd worker.
But I'm so loud. That also helps. And I'm not trying to shout over anybody, but it's just that my just natural way of existing is very, like, my voice is loud and my face is big and I'm just loud. You know, so it's easy for me to just kind of draw the thing back to the black hole on stage, you know, and do that. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's definitely a process. And it's, like, it's interesting because, you know, it's amazing what you can take from it. And I feel like some of the best comics are the ones that when, you know, that you'll look at a set and know that you're aware that you do well, because there are a lot of comics that'll do horrible and get off and be like, oh man, I just killed. You see that set? And we're like, what? No, I don't see that. What are you looking at?
Yeah.
I don't know. So self-awareness, I think,
is
a good thing. So we'll wrap up here. So, all right, I'm going to do, I don't think I did this question with any of the other interviews.
Uh-huh.
Like, so this is a very informal kind of interview or whatever, podcast show. I'm defending my podcast, people, and I haven't even aired it yet.
Yeah.
What would you get, like, for a new comic starting, what would be your Timmy's words of wisdom?
Oh, Jesus.
Do you have anything, any words of wisdom for somebody new?
Don't try to be offensive. Which, you know, when I told people that before, they're like, "For White as Kids was offensive, and so is your stand-up." It's like, yeah, but don't try to be offensive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For me, it's like, you can just really try and be natural as much as you can, you know?
Yeah.
And do it as much as you can. I mean, I feel like that's, anybody could give that advice, but that's definitely what I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely do it as much as you can.
But trying to be offensive, to me, is just, like, so grating. That's why, like, the dude that opened for us tonight is a local radio host, and people knew who he was, but he'd never done stand-up before.
Yeah.
And, you know, his stuff was fine, but what was cool about it is that he was just telling stories about his job or his kid or whatever, and that's, I feel like if you're starting stand-up, that's what you should do. Just tell a couple stories.
Don't try and
be like, I'm going to blow their minds with this rape joke, because you know what? You're not. You're going to sound like a jerk.
Yep, exactly. Oh, exactly. No. That's
9999 times out of 10, it's not going to work. So and don't even try to be that fraction.
And when you talk about you and your family and things like that, you don't have to worry about being called a hack or whatever.
Right.
Just a shock comment personal. Because you're being personal. You're talking about
everybody's got that kind of stuff. Everybody can relate. So, yeah, just trust in the fact that you're at least a little bit interesting.
All right. Well, thank you for doing the interview.
Of course. I hope I didn't vomit.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you. Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production. Hosted and produced by Dan Bublitz Jr., The Art of Bombing intro music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music used in this podcast was under the Creative Commons license. If you would like to help The Art of Bombing, you can do so by subscribing, rating, and reviewing our show on whatever podcast application you use to listen to The Art of Bombing. For previous episodes, blogs, and more, visit artofbombingpod.com. Have a great week. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.